Hello, Reactivators listeners. This is the COD King, Nick Banana Costanza. I am here today to tell you about the BioShock Games Club. This is the newest Games Club on our Patreon, patreon.com/supernpcradio. Tyler and I are taking the week off, but I wanted to post this episode for you to promote our Games Club. We are making a big push for Patreon subscribers right now, so if you like content like this, feel free to subscribe. We're going to be talking about the game BioShock in depth over the next couple of months here. This is one of my all-time favorite games. You may hear an ad with Atlas featuring in it. I don't know who recorded that voice, but it sounds super different from the kind of characters that normally show up on Reactivators. In any case, give it a listen. We'll be back next week with one of our favorite old guests. And in the meantime, stay frosty, would you kindly?
Welcome to the inaugural episode of the BioShock Games Club here on patreon.com/supernpcradio. Oh, good golly, Miss Molly. This is going to be quite an exciting season, methinks. We have a lot to talk about. BioShock, a game, a first-person shooter game that came out in 2007, as Wikipedia describes it, is our Q2. Our Q2 Game Club. I can't believe it's 2024 timestamp. We're already in Q2. Time is flying. We have an entire panel here waiting to get started. We have, of course, myself, Jeremy Schmidt. I'll be the host of today's episode. But then we have Connor McCabe over here. Hello.
Hey, Jeremy. I got some weird news. I got a new plasmid, and all it does is just shoot spaghetti out of my fingers.
Ew!
Yeah, it's kind of useless. I shouldn't have put it in one of my slots, but yeah. I actually haven't found one of those gene machines yet, so I can't even, splice like, change out. It.
Yeah, the gene machine. Oh, we'll get into the gene machine.
I actually do have a complaint on episode two.
Yeah, me too. Gene machine, not present for when I needed it. But it's good to have you here.
I'm feeling so validated already.
We have, of course, the incredible drill maniac, Roxy Polk. Hello.
Oh my God, drills are so cool. I'm so happy to be here and talk about drills. That's what this podcast is about, right? Drill reviews?
Yes. It's about drills, drill bits, keeping your drills nice and oily. How are you, Roxy?
Drill bit, Taylor.
Okay.
Nice.
Great.
Somebody has a Tim the Toolman impression they can do, right?
Yeah.
There we go.
We have, of course, the Big Daddy Splicer, Michael McCollar. Hello.
No gods or kings, only cuties like me.
It's good to have you. We have Andrew Ryan's little assistant running around trying to take his calls and hold his messages, Nick Costanza.
They told me, son, you're special. You were born to do great things. You know what? They were right.
Ooh, quite the impression. And of course, we have the little brother, July Diaz.
Where's my daddy?
Wah! Oh boy, this is great. You know, we just came off of the Mass Effect Games Club, and wouldn't you know it, we're covering another game that came out the exact same time. That we're living in an Xbox 360 year here. Maybe not the worst idea for a theme. I don't know.
Next, we're going to cover Portal, also a 2007 game.
Dude, what a year for games. I've never heard this year get called out for like being significant, but it seems to be a little significant.
It might be top heavy with these few. But I could be wrong.
Me and Roxy one time on a Super NPCs episode did like a draft of best years.
Yeah.
And 2007 is a sleeper between Mario Galaxy.
Yeah. I was going to ask if that
came out. Oh my gosh.
Oh, I forgot that was the same year.
Orange Box.
Yeah.
What a year. I like
Wait, is Portal then also that
Portal,
year?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Came out.
Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare?
Oh, Rock Band.
My favorite.
Nick just died and went to heaven.
Is this the year? Wait, what year did the 360 launch? Was it 05?
I think 05.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to say 05 or 06 maybe. I don't know.
So this feels like maybe the first big year for the next gen or something. Yeah.
I think this was the year I bought a 360. I think.
Me too. Me too.
It might have been early 2008, but I'm pretty sure it was 2007 because I had. And this is just some first-person shooter lore.
Yeah.
The old Costanza Meister.
We love.
I definitely had Call of Duty Modern Warfare before the next Call of Duty World at War came out, because I distinctly remember going, really, we got to go back to World War II. Isn't it a little old hat?
Mm-hmm. I remember when Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare came out, and I was at my friend's house, and we were having a sleepover. We were like in college, but having a sleepover at each other at his house. And I just remember everyone got really high. And then I woke up at one point, I looked, and my friend had his gun pointed at the sky and was just doing circles because he couldn't figure, he was so high, he couldn't figure out how to like lower his camera. Pretty surreal to wake up and see that.
It sounds like a Tim Robinson sketch where he also can't let go of the controller.
Yeah. This is a really exciting. I'm going to set the table a little bit for like what this game is. It is, as I said before, a first-person shooter game. That doesn't quite describe it. There's a lot of first-person shooter games. This one is like a very narrative-driven, narrative-forward first-person shooter game developed by 2K, but also directed by Ken Levine, who's a bit of a...
Lightning Rod?
Kojima type, maybe you might say. Like, he's a guy who has his own little following, his own little world of fans, and even before this game, I think a little bit of a long history in the game space. Like,
yeah, it was System Shock, right?
Yeah, those System Shock games, people like those a lot. I've tried to play the second one, and it's a lot like this, but in space. It's a really
interesting
kind of
hear
game.
He makes the same game all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's seems to be an iteration on an iteration, I guess.
He's kind of a Wes Anderson type. Like, it's...
Yeah, like, not in a bad way. I realize that might have sounded like it was a bad thing.
He has his medium, and he keeps doing stories that are similar, but, like, you can see the progress if you track them. And I say that having played two of his games and liking both of them.
I think it's subjective whether or not you think it's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, and just like with Wes Anderson, I think it's like... Mm-hmm. It can really speak to you, and you can love that, like, that type of refinement. I would say
yeah,
he's like refining
refinement.
One idea over time. Or you could be sort of like, hey, no, I want wildly different. And
I was wondering why I always saw Jason Schwartzman in all of his games. That is so funny. I get it now.
It's so funny when the Big Daddy finally takes off its helmet and he's like, geez Louise. It's like Jason Schwartzman over there.
I was definitely a Ken Levine acolyte for a while. In fact, I still haven't played BioShock 2, partly for that reason.
Yeah.
Although,
oh, yeah.
I understand it's pretty good, but I knew he had nothing to do with that one, so I've only ever played the first one in Infinite.
Oh, I didn't realize he didn't work on 2.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what happened behind the scenes. It seems so strange after, like, BioShock 1 was so successful. Like, why would you take away the guy who, like, was kind of spirited?
Well, because I think he was like, hey, it's going to take me a long time to make a new game. And there was like, well, let's just pump out another one. And because he was like,
cool,
like, it's
cool.
Very
that
clear
really
like
well.
What the artistic direction was between BioShock 1 and BioShock Infinite. And then BioShock 2 is just like
more
really
BioShock
standard
a little more.
Of how a sequel works.
That said, though, as much as I have a soft spot for BioShock Infinite, it is a mess. I think that he is. I really think he just knocked BioShock 1 out of the park completely. If you go through Infinite, which was another game that I really followed in the lead up to it, I was so excited for it to come out. And if you watch the early gameplay and the early trailers, it is completely different from what that game ended up being.
Is it like 2D?
It's not 2D, but It has characters who have one line in the final game who had story arcs and
Bazinga.
The Sheldon. Yeah. Sheldon shows up in it.
Oh, wow.
Young old, Sheldon
his
or
name's old Sheldon.
Oh.
It's old Sheldon, and then he is young Sheldon in the DLC for the first game.
I think that if you were a gamer at the time of the lead up to BioShock Infinite's release, you were hypnotized by it all. It looked so cool, and I'll say this, it was so cool. Like even though, for me anyways, even though it is a bit of a mess, and there's one part of it that I loathe, there is a lot of it that's so wonderful, and and that world is just so fun to be in. But I do think, it has aged poorly, I think, in the zeitgeist of when we talk about it. People seem to talk about all these games, actually, with a little bit less reverence than they had when they originally came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think BioShock 1, though, will always have, this very special place in my heart. So let's maybe get into some of the, some of our backgrounds with the game. I played this game way after it came out, probably in, 2010 or something. When I finally got a PS3 in this generation, I had a lot of catching up to do. It was 2010 or 11 when I finally got one. And so it was one of my favorite gaming seasons of all time, where I was playing back-to-back games like Arkham Asylum, BioShock 1, Uncharted 2. It was just Mass Effect 2, hit after hit after hit.
Dang.
I was putting in my rear view mirror, and it just felt like it never ended. The good games never ended, and this was definitely part of that. I did play BioShock 2. I don't remember it at all, which is probably a testament to that the kind of staying power that game has. I don't know. I've heard the combat's really a lot better than in this game, and there's a DLC to that game people love a lot called Minerva's Den. I've never played that. And then I played Infinite when it came out, and I played all of them only once. So this is my first time going back to BioShock 1. Connor McCabe, what's your history?
Yeah, Jeremy was a latecomer to the series. But before I even played it, it took me a while to even know what the game was. When this game came out in 2007, I was entering my most casual era as a gamer, the beginning of the Wii generation, which, at least when the Wii came out, was 2006. So I was locked in on what Nintendo was doing still at the time. But I even had started playing less of my DS, and was really only playing the big Nintendo hits Twilight Princess, Mario Galaxy, which would come out, Mario Kart, Smash Brothers. I did play a little Guitar Hero. For sure, I got three.
Well.
For the Wii. Nice. I was shredding over there. It's pretty sick. So that was great, but I was not only distant from games, but even Nintendo at the time, I wasn't locked in. So I remember I first noticed a Big Daddy because I played a round of PlayStation All-Stars at a friend's house one time. And has anyone here even played that series? Because I've only played it the once.
Dude, I've touched it.
Huge
once.
Big box copy on my shelf.
Wow. I've seen
freaking
the cover.
Love it. I love it.
It comes honestly with a collector's edition Sackboy and Kratos.
Yes. Yes. And I have it for Vita as well. It's great on Vita.
Dude. Oh my
gosh.
Wow. I genuinely
thriving community over there still?
Yeah.
On Vita.
I would love to play this game with everybody sometime. It sounds it's a curiosity at this point, but I remember seeing the Big Daddy in that game and being like, what the fuck is that? What is this giant guy in an underwater, a deep diving suit with the drill on his arm? And that was pretty much it for years.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I the first year I got a PlayStation 4 in 2019, kind of like Jeremy, was doing a bunch of ketchup and some mustard as well. July.
Thank you.
I could just tell. I was like, this is.
Yeah,
I set
it was
myself
right there.
Up.
Mm-hmm.
I was catching up on games, and I got PlayStation Now, and this was a game that you could stream. And I remember starting it, but maybe only played for about a half hour. Fell off as I was toying around with other stuff, and then this ended up being when I finally played it all the way through. it was a big COVID game for me. So,
oh, wow.
The summer of 2020, I had gotten this game by claiming it, this and I think the second one, on PlayStation Plus, back when I had a subscription. And this time when I played the game, I was all in. Also, COVID, you know, lockdown, pretty easy time to be like sucked into a game. It wasn't a lot that we were also distracted by outside, like recreation wise. So, but I remember just eating it up. I loved the game so much. I remember I had like, this is a silly detail, but I had rearranged my living room, and this was the first game I beat with my new living room arrangement, which really is pointless, but I loved the game when I played it. I didn't know the twist. I don't know, even maybe saying that is too much.
And who knows if there even is one.
Yeah, maybe there's not. We'll say. Maybe the twist is that there isn't one.
I think there's almost so many twists that the twists all flatten out and just become storytelling.
Oh, that's true.
Like, which one could you be
the
talking about?
The beginning's a twist.
So yeah.
I didn't know there wasn't a twist going in. So
I was like, Mario's not even in this.
Yeah, it turns out this whole game is just Mario's dream.
I can figure out, based on what you guys are talking about, that Chubby Checker might be appearing in the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
The master of the twist.
He might be.
That's time period appropriate, right?
I think so. And then, so I played it all the way through. And then Jeremy and I'm pretty sure we did an episode on Bioshock, an early Super NPCs episode, back when we would try to cover an entire game in an episode, and it was like, why are we doing this? This is too much work. But I think I played like a few chapters in as well. And this is my first time revisiting it though since then. And it's good to be back. I'm playing it on the PC. I don't have access to my PlayStation Plus games anymore, because that's how PlayStation does it, is that even though when you claim it, when you got a PlayStation Plus account, you have to have an active subscription to play them. So I ended up getting the remaster or the whole trilogy for like $11 on Steam. It not only comes with the remasters of 1 and 2 and all the DLCs, but it comes with the original ones. So I don't know when I would go and play the original, but I've got it.
That's exciting. Yeah, we should all say how we're playing it though, as well. Like I'm playing it through on my PS5.
Sick.
Yeah, but I was interested to hear, and maybe we'll get into that later, how the game looks on PC though. I wonder if it looks better, worse. Roxy Polk, what's your history?
So I, first of all, I guess I'm playing this on my PS4 because I love to live in the past. I don't have a PS5 yet.
Like this game.
Yes, exactly. And much like my first experience with this game, like I was still playing my PlayStation 2 when this game came out. So I was much later to getting a Xbox. I didn't like get one until after college, when a friend like gave me a deal on one that they were trying to sell, which is how I was able to obtain one as a broke ass newly out of college person. So I didn't get to these till much later. I was too preoccupied playing a lot of like RPGs and stuff. So my first experience with this game was actually watching like Let's Plays. So I didn't even like have my first experience going through the story on my own until like much later, like being able to play it on PlayStation Plus. But it had been so long that I forgot a bunch of like smaller things. I remembered some of the bigger plot points. But it's such a different experience playing this. Like, I had played more horror games by that point too, so it was like a little less scary. Whereas I feel like if I'd played this when it came out, like, you know, I played a lot of fixed camera horror games, you know, stuff on PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 era. This is a lot more in your face, and it's also like, it is a shooter, which didn't really play many at the time it came out. So it was kind of nice to go into this with a little bit of experience, but I am kind of bummed that I didn't get to experience the story for myself, because like the pacing and stuff that they have with this is very cool. It's easy to kind of miss some things because of all the audio logs. Like if you don't check the audio logs, it can be kind of easy to miss it. One of the biggest things I remember, like even before I ever played this, is just being enamored by like the art style. The art style for this game is like immaculate. It looks so cool. It's so spooky. Big Daddies. I don't know who came up with that design, but very cool.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
When he was chubby and Click. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Big Daddy body type.
Yeah.
I have a question too. The sort of like design and art style, is it called Art Deco?
Yes.
What's it called? Okay.
Yeah, it's Art Deco.
Yeah.
So it's kind of more of that like 1920s sort of aesthetic, mm-hmm. even though this takes place in what, the 60s?
Yes. Yeah. So thank you. That there's some there's a lot of confusion in this game right away. I feel like the game is intentionally trying to destabilize you. It's like telling you information and then showing you the opposite. And you're kind of like, but I will say that didn't dawn on me though until now. Like, I was an adult when I played it before. But in that 10-year span... Really?
But now you're married.
But I just think I understand more about, like, history and world politics and stuff now more than I did then.
Yes.
So now things ring a lot more, I don't know, eventful than they did before.
Yeah, there's, like, themes and narrative going on here that Ken Levine is obviously inspired by particular authors and things, I guess I'd say, or, like, ideas that, like,
any
I did
in particular you're thinking
percent.
Of?
Well, we'll get into
we'll
all
get
of that.
That.
Yeah, we'll get into all of it. Yeah, it's
JK Rowling.
This is going to be the most politically driven games club, I think, we've ever had, just because politics are sort of at the center of this plot. Diaz, what is your history?
So what year did you say this game came out again?
2007.
2007.
2007. Okay, so I was in diapers. Yeah,
definitely.
Of course. So your parents gave you as a baby the controller. It's your first controller.
Yeah, I wasn't sort of.
You thought it was your Baba.
I wasn't bottle fed. I was, you know, that's what they gave me, and so I kind of sucked on a controller for a lot of my
like
early
a true
years.
Gamer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I think a friend of mine had the game and let me borrow it when it first came out, and I think it was a little too, it had too much going on for me at that point as a pure Nintendo game person. I think I was a little too scared, and I felt like the difficulty at that time for me was a little much, even though you're kind of like forgiven for dying a bunch. You kind of just revive and come back on those, what are they called?
The Vita Chamber?
PS Vita Chamber.
The PS Vita Chamber. Mm-hmm. And so I never actually completed the game. I played up to, I think, Medical Pavilion is the most I've ever played previously.
We call that the Nick Costanza. You're like, I played this game, but it turns out it was the very beginning of this game.
Yeah, when the character creator destroys you before you can start playing.
Yeah, right. I think Medical Pavilion as a one-to-one is further than I got.
Yeah, and I think as Nick sort of mentioned, I heard tell of this Big Daddy quite a bit, and I was a little confused once I finally saw the Big Daddy that it wasn't the Big Daddy that I know, the Adam Sandler Big Daddy.
I'm fast forwarding my life.
Anything else? Okay.
Let's see. What else? What else do you want to know?
You got 20 more minutes.
I'm playing it on the Switch.
Oh, sweet. Sweet. Okay. I love that. Okay.
And
cool.
I'm playing it portable, so it looks
like
not
hell.
So great sometimes, but
it's interesting though. You talked about being a Nintendo boy, and you still are.
Hmm.
I am, yes.
You found a way to make the game work on a Nintendo gamer's schedule.
Yes, I've modded it to include Waluigi in certain sections of the game.
Oh, hell yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's narrating the game.
This is
for me.
Probably the most, like, as far as I can, I feel like it's an easy candidate for the games club that's going to be played on the most different systems here.
Maybe. Because
We've already got Switch, PS5, PC. Roxy, did you say your
PS4?
PS4?
Yeah.
The PlayStation family. Anyone playing it on Xbox? No.
Yeah. I wanted
to. Do any of us have an Xbox One? Or
I do.
I do.
Yeah. Okay. And so I really wanted to play it on Xbox, but I didn't want to rebuy it. I felt dumb doing that. But like,
it's
this feels like an Xbox game. Like, game time to me.
Very true.
I really didn't want to plug in my Xbox, so I bought it for $10 on PlayStation.
Nice. Nick, why don't we hear a bit of your history?
I guess if I have to. I love this game so much. I learned about it in eighth grade. I remember someone telling me about it. Gotta play BioShock. It's so good. So I knew the name, but it was also, I probably didn't play this in 2007. I probably played this a year later because I was real COD head already. I love first person shooters. This category was made for me. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.
And when I finally played this game, it changed my perception of games a little bit. I was so impressed by the story, the art direction, even the gameplay. Even if people might knock it now, I think it accomplishes a lot. I really like the way that you switch between weapons and plasmids, and the puzzle solving I found really fun in a similar way to Portal sometimes for me. And I think of BioShock as kind of a video games as art game. I also think it in some ways inspired me a bit as a creative, this and Infinite, in that there's been this persistent rumor forever that Gus Van Sant was going to adapt it. And it's like, please, please do.
That is such a fucking wild choice.
It's
I
crazy.
Really like that.
Gosh, we would have had Ronnie Adrian in the BioShock.
We would have.
I think Atlas is like a dream role for me specifically. If I could pick one role to play in a movie, probably would be that one.
Well, we'll kind of make one of those dreams happen, maybe for an ad.
I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, Mark, we need your voice.
Splicers.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Michael McCollar, I kind of made unintentionally saved you for last, but I do feel like you have like the most. This brings you the most joy out of anyone, maybe, here.
Yeah, I definitely bought this game like on release day. I remember I was working at GameStop and had a new Xbox 360 and was very, very much like in debate. Like, this is my sliding doors moment of my video game life. I could have chosen between this and Mass Effect.
Oh my God.
And I ended up at the last minute going BioShock. And took it home and played it. And remember this summer, this was the summer I was living with my grandmother during college.
And, awesome.
She had a swimming pool. So I just remember swimming all day, playing BioShock all night. And
wow.
I loved it so much. Like, the main character has these chain tattoos on his wrists. And I was like, I'm going to get those. This game means that much to me.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry to hijack, but I have to tell you, a kid I knew growing up got those tattoos.
Really?
Yes.
And I saw him at a gas station a couple years ago, just running into him after a long time. And he, he was showing them off to me. He was like, look what I got. I got the BioShock tattoos. And then he gets in his car and drives away. And it just had 9/11 is a lie bumper stickers. Like all
oh,
over.
Yeah.
It.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nick, how do you find these people?
I ran into him again last year when he and his friends stole a bunch of beer from our local grocery store. And I saw them run out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That is so interesting.
And did he recognize you then? And he was like, hey, check it
out. Check it out.
Robin.
I still got it.
Did you say Ayn Rand to him later? Or I ran into him later?
I said I ran into him.
McCollar, anything else?
Yeah, yeah. I played through the game. I loved it. And the next step on my journey was Roxy and I actually did an episode of Press X to Scream.
I was waiting on purpose to say this part.
Yes. So we can maybe talk about this now. So I replayed it, you know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And folks, this is not the song I wanted to play. I'm turning heel.
What?
I
Zoom's canceling out the song.
Zoom is just it's just for removing it.
How dare it?
Go into Zoom quick. Do your settings.
What's the song? We can hum it. We can hum the song.
It's a bad guy wrestler's entrance music. I've turned heel.
Don't know. Oh,
somebody.
Nice.
It's been a long time since I've been on the Games Club with a game I don't care for, and BioShock, I hate playing it. I love this story. I love this atmosphere. Yeah. I love so much about this game. I hate when I hold the controller and play it.
We also had to play it really quickly too. We had to like jam it into 1 month with everything else going on. I remember
we had the same problem that Connor and Jeremy had, where it's like, oh, we shouldn't play this so fast. We should do longer times. But yeah, I would still consider myself a Ken Levine acolyte. I love his games on YouTube. I love watching them and experiencing that story and kind of sitting in that world. I don't like touching buttons and making the character move and experiencing combat and gameplay. So I'm back to old shithead McCaller.
We missed our boy.
I thought when we wrapped up Sonic Adventure 2 that you'd never be back, and here you are.
I'll say this.
For Sonic Adventure.
I mean, look, it's a game from 2007. As of today, we are how many years away from that? Like,
who knows?
Almost 20 years past there, it. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, absolutely, this game shows its age, both in its look and the way that it plays. I do not think it plays worse than Mass Effect. I will say that. I think Mass Effect and BioShock, to me, I'm like, yeah, it's not as good as a game today, but they very serviceable.
For a first-person shooter, it's pretty easy to just jump into it, and it doesn't have much of for me to complain about besides a little bit of aiming stuff, but besides that,
You can't go down sights, which sucks.
You can with some weapons.
No. Oh, maybe with like a sniper or something.
You can go down sights with the revolver and the Tommy gun.
How do you do that?
It was right stick for me.
Oh, right stick. Mm. Okay, cool.
Also, yeah. I gotta give this is like standard first person controller stuff, and I guess I should. Yeah, expound on that a little
first
bit.
First person shooting to us. Uh-huh. You're codsplaining first person shooters to us.
I'm codsplaining. First up, I highly recommend this peripheral. The Control Freaks. I've been a big fan of these for a long, long time.
Whoa.
I replaced them.
What is that?
That freaked me out. Whatever you just held up freaked me out.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, it's like a stick on top of a stick.
Are those Ritz crackers
crackers.
Nick is holding up some Cronenbergian type controller.
They're stick extenders. They have rubber surfaces.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yes.
How dare
you? They double the size of your sticks. And it adds like at least 0.5 sensitivity. I can't remember what it is exactly, but first-person shooter games like Call of Duty, you do often change the sensitivity, especially on controllers, so you can change the axes faster. I have a couple things that I will just instinctively do with any game to get in that headspace now. So I always have the Control Freaks. I love those. The other thing I do, a trick I learned from an old YouTuber, is turn the brightness up to like 75%, just so you can make sure that you can always see that.
Oh, yeah. I always do that, especially in a game like this. Yeah.
Because it is pretty dark.
Can I ask you, was the YouTuber Shane Dawson, Nick?
It was not Shane Dawson, actually. It was a guy named XX Socrates.
Is Shane Dawson the person that one of you saw at my building that lives here? Or is that a different YouTuber?
Oh, I don't know.
He's the one who had a conspiracy theory about Chuck E. Cheese pizza that was not real.
Is he part of Pizzagate?
He's a different Pizzagate. Well,
Chuck E.'s Pizzagate.
Yeah.
Nick, I'm coming off of playing basically the entirety of Half-Life 2, both that game and like its supplemental episodes. And so I'm so used to having a flashlight that early on in this game. There are some like things coming from another narrative focused FPS that are different. And yeah, I better turn my brightness up because I'm walking around just like not pure knowing darkness. Where I'm
yeah,
going.
Yeah, stuff like this drives me crazy because it's not atmospheric. It's just annoying to like not be able to see where I'm going or something that I need. It's not scary. It's mm-hmm. just frustrating. Mm-hmm. And so many games, especially modern games, do this. But I guess they were doing it back in 2007 also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess I feel I don't. Whoa! Hold on, 1 second. Sorry,
Lily.
Intruder.
Lily's
cute dog.
She's suspects
Atlas
a
broken.
Daddy.
Oh no!
Atlas broken. You said
FedEx guy.
Yeah, Atlas
FedEx
broken.
Guy came.
Okay.
They knock on. They knock. Sometimes they'll ring my doorbell or knock on my door when I get a package, and I'm just like, guys. Why? I don't need that.
I wish my mail guy would do that.
You wish they would?
They'll just let packages sit and I won't even know they're there. And that's not great when it rains a lot here.
Yeah, so everyone is like kind of sort of talking around a couple of additional things I want to get into before we get into the game proper. One of them is like sort of how it's a different first-person shooter than others. So it's it kind of, I don't know if maybe Half-Life 2 did this first, but this whole idea that you're like switching hands, like in order to, one hand is basically doing special powers, while the other hand is shooting. Now this-
Wingardium Leviosa, the rest.
Mm-hmm, yep. So this mechanic would be developed later a little bit better where you can operate both at the same time, but in this game, you kind of have to pick and choose which one you're doing. I would say that is a thing that makes the combat slightly more clunky
strangely,
than it would otherwise be.
Strangely, I feel like this would, it's not really a Half-Life thing, but it feels like something out of a Bethesda RPG, more yeah. like the Elder Scrolls series. I wonder if yeah. Oblivion did a similar thing like the year before, because Skyrim, it's kind of like that, where you could hold like a shield or like a flame spell in left and a sword in your right. But I noticed that too, Jeremy. I forgot it's kind of like one at a time in yeah. this game, it feels like.
It definitely is. And in fact, when you first click in L2 or R2, it simply brings up the other hand as opposed to launching a spell or launching an attack. So you always have to click it twice if you're trying to move over, which is just an extra click and maybe an extra thing that doesn't feel quite as intuitive. But thanks for bringing up Bethesda. I think that this has a lot to, Bethesda has a lot to do with this game. Like, the way you like explore the world and are picking up all of this crap is exactly how Bethesda does exploration and item collection.
Yeah, down to like little details of like I didn't do this in because I again coming off of Half-Life, it's going to be impossible not to compare it to Half-Life 2. Yeah. But I'm inspecting every dead body. I'm making sure I'm looking in every corner, seeing if any box can be like looted. Yeah. Very reminiscent of that, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, I just was playing Starfield, and I mean, there's just no difference between like how you the loop of that and the loop of this. It's just you're trying to clear out an area by picking up as much items as you can.
I feel like I'm gonna go all McCaller on here with the story structure and stuff, but I really love the inclusion of the audio tapes. I think it's so, it feels so rewarding as a collectible that you're walking around this dilapidated area and you're only learning what happened through the memories of the past. I just think it's really cool. Yeah. And it provides so much insight into these characters. I think something this game does kind of get knocked for fairly is some of the character models are not great. Even we'll get to it, but like Steinman in the medical pavilion, you have this great image of him on the audio tape, and the dialogue and voice acting is so good, and then it's just this kind of lumpy surgeon.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think you know, graphically, you know, people were bringing up like the darkness or like the lighting effects in this game as potentially being a barrier for some folks. That I, in some ways, I feel like that is in, a lot of that is included to sort of mask that if you get up close to an NPC, it's like horrible to look at because they're so not humanoid almost. Yeah. Like they're, but it's also again old game or whatever. But absolutely, Nick.
Are we all playing remastered? Like nobody's playing the original version. So, but like Connor, you have access to it on the same.
Yeah, I could
system
poke around, but I'm also playing remastered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder like how different they look in the remaster versus the original. Then
it's,
it might be the cognitive dissonance thing of where it's like now it's like super rendered, but it's like still just Xbox armature. And
right, a CRT.
So
it maybe like glossed over them and they looked cartoony as opposed to now they look inhuman.
They still look pretty cartoony. I mean, it's
a style choice.
I agree. Like, yeah, it's just not the most detailed models or like. The way they chose to express, you know, human characters is more of a cartoon than anything.
To kind of shout out an episode we did with Connor on Call Me By Your Game a while ago, this game really, like replaying these first two levels, really, really made me appreciate Firewatch. In terms of like how it knew what it could do. Like that was the first thing. Like the little sisters look like shit in this game.
Yeah.
And like thinking about how Firewatch was like, our characters will probably look like shit. So we just shouldn't have our characters in. And they built that into the narrative. There's such like there were so many smart choices. Like I think ultimately my overall issue with this game, because I 100% agree with Nick when he says like the audio logs are fantastic. The environmental storytelling in this game is fantastic and does encourage you to like, I want to explore because I want to see what fucked up shit people like wrote on the walls in blood. Like it's such an immersive story that like it makes me feel like the next step for BioShock was closer to Firewatch or Gone Home than it was to BioShock Infinite. Like realizing what they're really, really good at and hacking down to just the core like storytelling mechanics as opposed to building up like BioShock Infinite still has plasmids, which I like as a storytelling decision. Actually, I know a lot of people don't, but like, It's just like that's not a gameplay hook that I feel like is enhancing the storytelling, which is what this game is really special at.
And I have so many thoughts on Infinite, but I'll say I find the gameplay to be more disappointing in that than it is in this because it just doesn't feel like it fits at all to me. I almost wish a game like Infinite was just a storytelling game.
Yeah. They were just like, it's a video game on this console in this year, so it has to have combat. We have to have this many encounters. You have to have this many enemies with this much health, because otherwise it's not a video game. I would also agree with your point, Mikey. I think it's kind of to its detriment where it feels a little like there's just a lot of enemies running around because we need to have them running around because video games.
It's a suspension of disbelief thing of like, you imagine that if they were to show you the movie of this, they would disclude most of these combat scenarios. But
yeah, I think something like Soma did a really good job where encounters are a lot more infrequent and they matter a lot more. And they're a lot more like, you know, the big daddy doesn't feel like something you should be able to kill. It's a big threatening thing. Having it as a force that like kind of you have to navigate around is a lot more interesting to me than being able to like electrocute it in a boss fight or something, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish it was a Mr. X-esque figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did somebody say Mr. X?
No!
He's here!
Mikey, thank you for bringing up environmental storytelling. I did want to touch on that it's not just audio logs. We actually get two different flavors of understanding the story, both as it's told to you via audio logs, but also just for looking around the world, you can sort of discern things in a way that feels very satisfying to me as a FromSoft fan. I do like coming into a room and being like, oh, you can see where the Big Daddy got killed by the splicers and crashed into the secretary's office. And, you know, like, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. The last thing I want to bring up is that this game is sort of like deeply steeped in like politics. The whole idea of the place that
like to get political.
Well, too bad. Because this game will force
I'm
you
echoing
to...
Connor here. I also don't
my thing is that this game forces you to have to think about politics in a way that maybe you weren't ready for and maybe you don't understand. I will say this, it's also there is some like confusion here, I think, ultimately about, like, for example, like Andrew Ryan is described as like an individualist as opposed to like the United States, which is like there isn't a distinction there. Like the United States is a very individualist country. So it's sort of like Andrew Ryan is also like his name is like Ayn Rand sort of like jumbled around, which is a very famous writer who wrote Atlas Shrugged and a couple of other things.
Another character called Atlas. We got another.
Yeah. There's a lot of references to, but as they are the enemies, quote unquote, enemies of the game, there is some ideas in here about maybe that's not, it's not like necessarily the Ken Levine's like, this is good necessarily.
No, I think if you take it very simply, this is the ultimate capitalistic individualistic society and it has failed before you showed up.
I feel like the theming in this works better than Infinite for sure, in my opinion.
But I want to say
aspects of Infinite are like deeply deeply troubling and
well
nightmarish.
I would argue both Infinite and BioShock do a really this game and Infinite do a really good job of like by the end of it. And I do know what moment you're talking about in Infinite, Jeremy, and I do agree that on its face it's tough, but within the context of the story, I really get it. I think by the end of this game, the critique is so like not subtle. It actually reminded me, and I was thinking about doing this. I almost ordered the book off of Amazon and decided not to do it. I was thinking about pitching like a small segment for this Games Club where I review a couple of chapters of the John Knowles book, A Separate Piece. And the only reason I say that is because I feel like BioShock is kind of my separate piece for video games in the sense that it was the first book and BioShock was the first game that was very thematically rich, but I could get like it feels like it's kind of like a baby's first understanding of cultural critique in media and feeling like I think that was a big part of my enjoyment was like realizing like, oh, this guy seems fucked up, but is this idea fucked up? And actually kind of like, you know, 2007, who remembers that time period? I think I was a liberal, but you grow up with right-leaning parents. You do kind of need to like be desensitized to that sort of stuff. Like it was a big deal for me to realize like, oh, this is like an interesting way to look at the idea of this like bootstraps mentality and that it's like really shitting on it in a way that like, felt digestible for me at that time in my life.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeremy.
No, you go ahead.
I think that everybody at this point picks up on those aspects of the political philosophy, but I've been in a deep toxic rabbit hole in the past few weeks of listening to streamers debate conservatives online.
Oh, wow.
Because I think it's so funny, and I think it's so funny to listen to their arguments. But what I think is interesting about BioShock, this is the lightest tease. It's easy to see the like capitalism is the bad guy. This conservative mindset is like more evil. That's I think where we're being led to believe. But it has a character type I've maybe never seen before, which is this like someone who has weaponized the fighting for the proletariat philosophy and is actually their philosophy is the opposite. I think that that is a really interesting element of this. And I noticed that that doesn't really exist that much in today's political climate because so many like greedy conservative people have realized they can just openly say, I'm greedy, I want your money, and they'll still get it. They don't even have to pretend.
But I mean, but to what you're saying, though, I do think that exists in American politics, weaponizing something that you may not necessarily agree with. Like you imagine, I mean, thinking about like Donald Trump, right? Like there's a side of Donald Trump where you're like, you can't, like for how pro-life Donald Trump is, for example, like he's on record of like having had multiple, you know, affairs leading to abortions and stuff like that. So there's like this deep irony setting in with like, I think a lot of modern day politicians for sure, like conservatives getting busted for all kinds of stuff that they preach against, you know?
Yeah, sure. And like, go ahead.
It just tends to go the opposite way. It usually is like a conservative pretending something they don't believe in or sanitizing their own ideals, but rarely do you see like a conservative person who's pretending to be a liberal.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think we do actually see that a lot now, but Nick, at your point, I'm totally with you. But there are examples of that that's out there, but Nick, it's maybe less common, or like less common that we've seen for sure.
It paints a very dark picture of politics in general, which I think is, unfortunately, my belief is more or less some kind of accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But Roxy, you're going to say something?
I guess it was like a little deeper dive, just like kind of commenting on like, yeah, people who say they're pro-life don't care about when the kid is actually born and supporting them or anything. Like, it's such a hypocritical thing. But I would say also with the stuff going on in BioShock, like right from the get-go, it's kind of like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and everything you do, you know, just you get to keep that. The government doesn't get to keep it. So there's like, I don't know, a lot of layers going on here.
Yeah, I think that, and maybe this is getting too far into it, like of the actual game, but the way that that's laid out for you feels like they do a really clear job of at least what's being presented to someone who might be going where to like the start of Rapture. And that's probably a little
like
too far ahead, but
what they signed up for, I guess.
Yeah.
Like why they're here.
The presentation is strong and clear, I think.
And all this being said, though, while on its face, it does kind of feel like some sort of socialist, sort of like pro-socialist, you know, video game in some kind of ways, I do feel like, unfortunately, and maybe this is just a product of the time it came out, it does tend to attract more of like Nick's friends than it does maybe like progressive thinkers.
His best friends.
Yeah, these people who are like, I love the anarchist cookbook, I hate the government, 9/11 was an inside job, and BioShock is my favorite game. Like, I feel like it sort of really appeals to the more conspiratorial side of us, for whatever reason.
The Fight Club problem. It's like the misunderstanding of a very clear critique of an idea as being in support of an idea, which is tough.
I don't like what's going on with Helldivers 2 a little bit.
Is that happening in Helldivers? Yeah. Or I guess by extension, the Verhoeven movie.
Starship Troopers. Which Helldivers is based on. It's it's very satirical and mocking of like fascism, but at a certain point, if you pretend to be something, do you become it?
Yeah. It's why I think satire is so stupid.
Wow. Also, I'm sorry if I gave the most brain dead take on politics just now.
I don't think you did. I think it's also a thing where it's like
I'm just here sitting, I'm listening,
yeah,
I'm learning,
yeah,
I'm digesting.
I think that like that I was listening to a podcast recently where everyone on the podcast started claiming that they're not political as if it was a comedic bit, but it wasn't. They were all trying to say that they weren't political, and it was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard, is like four people in a room claiming to be not political. It's like, sorry guys.
Yeah, being alive is basically political in a way. Like, you can't really avoid it. So like,
so true.
The idea that you could just completely divorce yourself from it in any way.
I do get the sense, like, and this is something that I've like struggled with in my life, is just feeling like overwhelmed and feeling powerless. So you kind of distance yourself. Like stuff like BioShock, like it's on the sleeve. It like this is closer to an essay than it is a story.
And, yeah, well, it wants to have a conversation.
As I say that, I want to take that back. That's too hard. There are a lot of essay-like traits to the storytelling in BioShock, where they're kind of just saying the quiet part loud. And
yes,
honestly, I kind of appreciate that. I kind of like when it's, again, I sometimes think satire is stupid. Sometimes you just need to say what you mean. And I think BioShock comes pretty close to doing that in a lot of times. And yeah, it's fine.
I absolutely agree.
Starship Troopers.
It's not cloak and dagger in the same way that Starship Troopers isn't.
I love RoboCop.
RoboCop.
RoboCop does it the best of the
very
three.
Very on the nose.
Can we just do a RoboCop games club?
Dude, RoboCop is maybe in my top five favorite movies of all.
Me too.
Isn't there like a RoboCop game that came out recently?
Yes.
Yeah, like last year.
And some people like it, and it's making me freak out.
Yes, I understand.
That's going to be a PS Plus banger someday.
Yeah.
Once that game is free, I'm on it. Yeah, I agree. RoboCop, I think, is one of the best movies of all time.
Peter Weller also reprised the role for Mortal Kombat and... Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
What?
Is he the Colonel now?
RoboCop is the Colonel.
That's cool.
He also, I don't know if it was Peter Weller or not, but it was RoboCop did show up in WCW to have a wrestling match.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, wow, that
did
is
he just
not
shoot
a good
everyone
costume
to death
for wrestling.
I honestly don't remember what happened in the match.
Oh my gosh.
Or if I ever saw it. I just know that it occurred.
I'm sorry to take us down this rabbit hole further, but has anybody seen the movie? I think it's called My RoboCop Remake.
Yeah.
No,
oh,
what is it?
This is like the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. These independent filmmakers, a group of them, remade RoboCop shot for shot, but one particular segment, because they do it in like 5-minute chunks, there's this scene in the movie where...
Oh, yeah.
He shoots the guy between the woman's dress. It's like
yes.
A nice stick shot. And they had these indie filmmakers film a scene. Fatal Farm. Including, I believe, John Watts, who directed the last three Spider-Man movies. And in this scene, they have RoboCop. And he shoots the one guy in the dick, and then like a horde of naked guys run out, and he just starts shooting all their dicks off. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's all practical effects too, and the two guys who directed it, they just were able to gather all these fake prosthetic penises for it, and yeah, it's really well shot and well done.
And supposedly the guy who plays RoboCop in it was a guy who had a RoboCop costume, but they filmed him in a way where he didn't really understand what the scene was.
Yeah, they found him on some RoboCop forum and asked him if he wanted to shoot this thing, and he was like from out of state, and he drove all the way over to like somewhere in LA or something, and they didn't tell him what the scene was until he arrived.
That's awesome.
I think you can draw a direct line from RoboCop to the Big Daddy suit.
Yes, that's good. And I think you can, I think all of this stuff is hovering on the same thing where it's like satire that is more explicit than it is buried within like the narrative. Like McCall, everything you're saying, I think is spot on about like, it just being like baby's first philosophy class or baby's first economics class or something where it's like, it's definitely not, it's a definitely still a video game maybe for kids as opposed to, you know, Kieslowski's Decalogue level of like metaphor and stuff.
Having not played Spec Ops The Line, that feels like what the next evolution theoretically would have been. But
yeah. Okay. Well, let's finally get into the game, shall we? Could we kindly get into it?
We could.
Okay. So, I played all of our homework last night. It's pretty fresh. It's this opening is pretty iconic. July, as someone who's has less experience with the game, walk us through this opening sequence and your thoughts.
I don't remember.
What the hell?
Wait, no, you're on a plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're on it.
And let's see if I can actually truly remember what happens.
It does say like Atlantic Ocean 1960, I believe, right?
Okay, and then you have a gift of some sort or something?
A gift.
Right? And what does it say on the gift?
Your name is Jack, and it says something about, like, love mom and dad, something like
that. Okay, so it's a gift from your parents, and then something...
You're smoking.
You're smoking, and something terrible. You order orange juice. Mm-hmm. From the stewardess.
Yeah. And you have to go to the bathroom.
You go to the bathroom. It's
long.
Really long.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is one of the pilots.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leslie Nielsen's there with his fart machine.
He farts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The plane goes down. And I'm like, well, I'm playing this thing. And I'm like, Is the game over?
Yeah, dead.
Am I dead? Lost.
Yeah, did I lose? And no, but there was a moment where it kind of transitions very quickly into the gameplay, and I got confused. And I think maybe a prompt tells you, like, move around to swim. Mm-hmm.
The first time I played this game, I sat there for way too long, not realizing it had transitioned to gameplay when you're hovering in the water.
Yeah.
Nick, you kind of did a little thing in the opening referring to a little voiceover that the main character, your player character, says.
Oh, yeah.
On the plane. Can you cover this for us?
This might be some of the only dialogue you get from Jack.
Yeah.
This is another thing that was extremely common for first person shooters in this time was the silent protagonist. Call of Duty, I feel like, really popularized it because you'd jump from character to character that never spoke. Sometimes they'd show up in cutscenes and they did.
Well, what about Link?
Yeah, my favorite Call of Duty character.
Well, just silent protagonist.
Oh, right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're still doing that today, even outside of like Zelda and stuff, which I don't vibe with that really. It kind of frustrates me, to be honest. I get why they do it.
You hear this dialogue. Should I do it again? I already did it once.
No, do it again. Do it again.
Do it again.
Yeah. Please
do it again.
Cut to Jack. Smoking cigarette in one hand, gift in the other. They told me, son, you're special. You're born to do great things. You know what? They were right. And as quickly as we fade to black. You hear screaming. Sounds like the plane is going down. And then we get that BioShock logo. Water streams down it. Oh, I get chills. Mm-hmm.
So
get
cool.
Chills. All of a sudden we wake and we're underwater. This is the moment where everybody's talking about. You realize that you are in control of our protagonist, Jack. You got to swim to the surface. And I just love.
At this moment, McCullough's like, I don't want to move. I don't want to touch my controller.
Yeah, he's like, God damn it. This sucks.
Yeah.
Well, pop out of the water.
I think this gameplay is going to transition to YouTube for me at some point, and then I'll love it. Then I'll think it's perfect.
You see a gasoline fire. You just gotta kind of follow the path of the water. You almost get crushed by the fuselage when you're underwater, I think. And then you see the plane's tail sticking out of the water. Very cool. All of a sudden, there's a lighthouse. We're called to it.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah, it's so cool.
There's like the moon is out. It's like the lighthouse when you first see it is framed by the moon. It's such a great shot. I'm so glad it ended up becoming such an important part of the story in BioShock Infinite that we also got a lighthouse. Just like,
I mean, there's always a lighthouse, right?
There's always a lighthouse.
Yeah. So the lighthouse is interesting. I'll make a note here that like it exists, I believe, in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Without anything around. That's like a big clue as to like, wait a second, this something's amiss.
Yeah. Who are you directing?
Yeah.
It's like an air traffic controller in the middle of a field in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
Who's landing there?
Yeah. Freaking people who live there. Okay, so you you go up into the stairs and the door is a little cracked open, and I actually don't crank the brightness up for this. I like dark games. I like everything being dark and like atmospheric like that. It really works for me. And this whole section's great because it's like you go in there and it's completely pitch black, like so the vibe is like, you're like, and then the lights come on and July.
Yeah, real quick though, like I have a problem when I have to do gameplay and kill enemies and stuff like that. But I do think for atmospheric purposes and stuff that you're talking about, Jeremy, it is very cool to have it be like in darkness and then lit in a particular way.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. It's another moment that makes me go, this game is a better walking simulator than it is a game.
Movie. Just
make it
a movie.
I like closing my eyes during those really dark sections. Yeah. So it's even darker for me.
July plays completely this game immersed. As a podcast.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so you walk into this lighthouse, you go downstairs. In this game, I don't think there's much to really look at or...
There is a banner.
Yeah. Oh, strong disagree.
Yeah.
This is maybe my favorite part of the game.
There's a large statue and soon learn is Andrew Ryan with the banner that says, "No gods or kings, only man."
Yeah.
His giant face is gold and protruding forward. And this is a detail that I don't remember seeing before. There's also a little plaque in front of it. First of all, he's already got "no gods or king, only man." Like, I get your philosophy, dude. He also has a little plaque that I wrote down that says, "In what country is there a place for people like me? Andrew Ryan." So he has two quotes in this room, both in different ways, the most insane thing a human being has ever said. Uh-huh. Like, I love this character. Like, Andrew Ryan is an all-time great character. Like, I think everything about him is so, like, he's coherent but surprising. Like, he is very much, in an improv sense, he has his game and he plays it hard, but he plays it in such surprising ways.
We keep learning more about him. Too bad.
He did.
Yeah, he'll call enough.
He's doing a lot of golf club stuff.
He is his character design and sort of how he sits in history is very much modeled after people like J.D. Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. And Walt Disney is a huge character pull for Andrew Ryan.
The mustache, I feel like, makes me think real Walt Disney.
And I think the way he talks to that mid-Atlantic kind of like...
Oh, sure.
You know, "I'm Andrew Ryan.
I like Mickey Mouse." Yeah.
It explains the Goofy cameo.
Yeah. I believe it's... Do you continue to go down, or is the bathysphere sort of like... around here?
Yeah, I think once you pass underneath the Ryan statue is when you find the bathysphere.
Yeah, so you get into this little ball or whatever. It's like a little elevator that's going to take you down, and you start to go underwater. I think this opening is very iconic. Like, it, everything about this leading up to and through this moment is iconic to me. It's like you're going down. So cool. It's showing you how the levels as you're falling down, and then
I'm getting claustrophobic at this point.
It's funny because I think being in first person makes you feel a lot more claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were in third person, this would be a kind of a different game.
I think what adds to that too is that this game will, you know, most of the game you have control over the camera, of course, but there are a number of moments when they really want you to not miss something, or they will go, instead of doing something in engine and having a cutscene or like a scene play out like you would in Half-Life 2 generally, and you can sort of move around and watch it from any angle, you're watching it from a fixed angle, and they'll wrestle the controls away from you. Mm-hmm. So that I noticed, Jeremy, too, in the bathysphere, you can only turn your camera so much. They fixate you so that you will not miss, you know, seeing Rapture in the ocean as you go through.
That's so interesting. I was going to say the opposite. Like, you can turn your camera, because I did miss it.
Hello. You can turn a bit and like...
Look, because I was looking at a sign that said like radio on.
You can turn, but I don't think, you can definitely turn enough to focus on that, but I think you can't like turn all the way around at the very least.
Yeah.
Right. You can't look at your feet during the big Rapture reveal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a big reveal. You basically come down past like some coral and some fish, and then boom, Rapture is sort of timed with Andrew Ryan's speech he's giving you in the bathysphere. And the music is also, we didn't mention this at all, iconic. I think
it's so good. The music is great. Yeah.
This whole opening I still think works so well.
Yeah.
One detail about the music, Jeremy, that I think I've caught before, but it's kind of like sets the theme for BioShock's music throughout, is like it begins as you're descending upon Rapture, as Ryan's narrating it, with this sort of bombastic, almost majestic, triumphant sort of theme that is then undercut by this almost like tragic and harrowing string instruments. I don't know if it's a violin or what, but it almost, to me, just illustrates the tragedy of Rapture in general, of like look what's possible for us, and then, oh no, look how it all just descended to hell.
That might be
a old take, but like,
no, playing it's it well put.
I was struck by it.
Yeah, yeah. I like that a lot. And I also like the idea that if that is in the music that they put when they were introducing you to Rapture, it's like the flaws of this philosophy are baked into the philosophy. It's not that like we just got the wrong combination of people. It's just that like from the start, the instruments were playing sorrow. It's never going to work.
Interesting. Yeah.
And you're kind of getting, I think, these violin cues around the time you're seeing a Big Daddy for the first time. And what I love is that when you're introduced to the Big Daddy, you're seeing the practical application of the Big Daddy right away. So it's not just a cool design. It's like, no, they actually need these guys to fix the outside shell of this city. So it's really impressive. Really impressive opening.
It's something I remember we said a lot about Mass Effect, that they were really good about, like, you would go to an area and they'd be like, this is why the Geth are here. There's a reason for this to happen. I feel like BioShock is really good about, like, it's not just there are enemies here. There's a reason there are defense turrets. There's a reason there's a Big Daddy. There's a reason there are splicers. And they all are kind of flowing from this narrative source.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the sort of this very, I don't know if it's a cynical take or just a sort of a bleak take on humanity, that like when left to its own devices, an individualist society will lean on violence more than anything else to like sort of set its boundaries against each other. Hence the turrets and the cameras and like, because in a city that otherwise looks like Disneyland, why would you need? What's the need for all these violence? Like, even when you get a plasmid, I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit, it shows you the application of how to use it for combat. It doesn't show you, like, the picture of you lighting a woman's cigarette. It's like, no, light your friends on fire.
That's interesting.
Okay, so you, in your little tube way, you arrive at your destination. It looks so majestic from the outside. Roxy, what happens on the inside?
Once you get where you're going, the lights flicker off and it's time for the horror show to begin. You've got some very like menacing characters saying some fucked up things. If you've got the subtitles on, you'll hear that or you'll see like the name that they're called splicers. And you're like, what is that? What the fuck is a splicer? And they notice that you're a new guy in town and they want to get you. So they are literally trying to claw their way into your bathysphere.
Is it like someone new?
Yeah.
And this is where you can really look all around.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's I think this is still incredibly iconic. Like all of this stuff, like the way that the light is hitting the splicer. One thing that's I kind of didn't catch the first time I played, but I catch this time, is that you can hear Atlas before you meet him and talking to a person who's there. And then who gets disemboweled by a splicer. Yeah. And you imagine the person who's there is not a splicer, at least from the way that they're behaving with the splicer. Yeah.
I was surprised by that too. I was like, who is this character that they're introducing? Like, I don't remember them. And then I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, like they were trying to escape in the bathysphere maybe that you came in on possibly.
Yeah.
And then just didn't make it.
You hear Atlas talking to that person.
Yeah, he's like, go down there.
They're like, get him down. Get down there. Somebody's coming up. They're like, kind of like, having a brief conversation.
Gotcha.
I have a thought on this that I think I want to hold till later in the club because I don't remember if it comes up, but I think even if it doesn't, there's some interesting conclusions we can draw from this moment and whoever that was.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I would say hold that because I think I know exactly what you're thinking.
Okay. I know exactly what you're thinking too. And I'm not just saying that.
Yeah. What do you think, July?
Oh, you want me to just say it?
I want you to guess what you think we're thinking.
Time travel.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so I thought I'm going to have to fight this thing and that's going to and you have no weapon. You feel so vulnerable right away. You step out of the bathysphere and you actually don't have to fight anything.
You get a brief instruction too for the first time.
Yes, you meet a character.
Yeah, you finally, like we were talking about Atlas talking to you through this radio. Once this person goes down, Atlas is like, hey, would you kindly pick up that shortwave radio? And so that's how you end up communicating with him and a couple other characters throughout the game. You carry around this radio, and he basically is like, hey, get to, what does he say, Nick? Does he say, get to safety, get out of here?
Higher ground.
Higher ground. Hold your ground.
Yeah.
Hold your ground. Yeah, and this is the first time you've also seen from the inside what this like little world looks like, and it is an Art Deco space a la the 20s?
Yeah.
It was actually constructed in the 40s, like as per the lore of BioShock.
Mm-hmm. That kind of makes sense then that like in the planning of it would be right in the 20s, right? You have to imagine Andrew Ryan was immersed in Art Deco when the germ of this idea was coming up.
I think also that like Americana style, there's something very timeless about Art Deco style, where like you will still see people like try to aim for that aesthetic today for a specific reason, and bring up Walt Disney too, a lot of like Disney kind of Americana and architecture from like some of the previous stuff, the last like decade or so, not so much, but like they were really hitting that hard for like a really long time as part of their aesthetic, for a timeless feel to it, I think. Like a grand sort of Americana feel.
Yeah. Totally. The whole place and time for Rapture is really strange and interesting because again, it's like the 60s. So peace and love, baby, as you're like now put back in time, but you're to a place that was built in the 40s after the Great Depression, but is very much informed by the Great Depression. Like that's what the 20s are in the 30s are the Great Depression. But by the 40s, we're in World War II. We are coming out of the Great Depression, and there's a whole new aesthetic happening.
Sort of sounds like you're talking about aging too.
Perhaps.
It was, I was kind of thinking like Roxy was saying how much this aesthetic feels very American and feels like I think about like Gatsby is kind of like the embodiment of this aesthetic. And that's probably informed by the Great Depression. That was the first time we really got like nostalgia. When things got so hard, we look back to our last era and we're like, that's when things were really good. Mm-hmm. And it kind of became this like elevated truly, I would argue, the fate of BioShock itself. We look back on it with more fondness than it that felt mean. I'm gonna alternate between being horribly cruel to this game and geeking out over it.
It's fine. I just disagree. I don't think it like holds up in a bad way to me. I think it's simplistic, but I enjoy it still. Even just like being able to shock the water or ignite gas. It's cool.
I definitely do think that I definitely do like playing this game a lot. But I will say, the thing that you're like include in on at this point too, I believe through the video that you've watched already. I believe you've seen this video already, but it is Andrew Ryan's point of view video, and he is saying like, is a man not entitled to the sweat of his brow? It's like a kind of a famous little monologue, and he's taught. And what he specifically points out is that like in the U.S., the government wants to give your money to the poor. The Vatican wants to take your money for God, and Mother Russia wants to give it to everyone. So he's sort of aligning himself against all three ideals. And yeah, and I mean, like, there's great little images to go with this, like a giant American bald eagle like grabbing a man, and like I love using like iconography to like reframe or resuggest something in a propaganda way. It's like such an interesting tool.
And that moment is when you're in the bathysphere, is when you watch it. And that's how they reveal Rapture. They say, here are the three ideas we've been presented. Mm-hmm. And then he says specifically, I chose none of them. I chose Rapture. And that's when the screen comes up. And that's when you see the city. It's like really presented as like Andrew Ryan as this outside the box thinker. It's like Nintendo when they were making the Wii. They were like, we can't keep doing the same three things. Let's just go complete blue ocean. And talking about like what a great character Andrew Ryan is, like the madness is baked in. You can see how close this is to the United States, especially at this time, and how so silly for him to like get this narcissism of minor differences sort of take on how he needs to build a city in the sea to kind of just do a little more of the United States.
Yeah, because honestly, he's like a white guy in this time period, already super rich. Like, he's got everything handed to him. It's just like,
where's there a place for me?
Yeah. Exactly. There's no place for me here. I got to build it myself under the ocean like any sane person would do.
Yeah, and I think there's always a, like, kind of what we were talking about, like, politics, you know, earlier in this conversation. Like, there's, for me, I'm always going like, okay, but what's the catch? Like, this person clearly can't truly believe this. Like, this is how he's probably starting a cult or like a religion. Mm. Like, and this is how you would do it in sort of the, you know, a Scientology sort of way. You know, you almost like put on airs of like something. And I think this game does posit the question, like, does Andrew Ryan really believe what he says? And we'll find out later.
Yeah, especially because like his quote at the beginning is "No gods or kings, only man," with a big ass statue of himself in gold. Like, he is the man
as a king.
Yeah, like he is the king. Like, everybody else is like just following his lead and have him like up at the top and stuff. So like he's just making himself king of a new fiefdom.
Also, if you're role playing as a guy who's from the '60s, this is like the Cold War's happening. No.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it would be.
So this whole attack on Russia is ringing maybe even more true for somebody from the '60s than it would be from somebody from the '20s. I don't know if that is making ring, you know,
for like our main
landing with anyone,
right?
But yeah, for the main character, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so you're running along, shit's destroyed, lights are flickering, we're seeing little splicers here and there. Atlas does come in and help us with his little flying turret thing. Those things are going to come into play a little bit later, but around this time you do find your first weapon, which is a wrench.
Classic.
a very strange roommate I had in college taught me a great way to play this game. Legit strategy. You can basically play the entire game by shocking people and hitting them with the wrench.
Yes.
I almost did it this playthrough. Ultimately, I just have too much fun shooting Tommy guns to do that. But it's what a great weapon, the wrench.
There's nothing more satisfying than taking a big daddy down with a wrench. I'll say
What does he say? Like, zap him and bop him? Like,
he zap him and whack him feels intuitive to me, but I don't think it's that.
Yeah. Well, he says bop it.
I think bop it, twist it, I think.
He says twist it.
Ratchet, lick it, piss it.
Ratchet, clank it.
I think it is a fun, like, 1-1-2 sort of method that I think is something that was, if it wasn't already done in games, was definitely taken and used in other ones, of like a 1-2 combo. Almost like, a boxing back and forth of like zap, whack, I did it. Some enemies take more than that, but I'm pretty sure the character makes a comment. Or Atlas does. Atlas says something along the lines of, it's not a crowbar, but it'll do, or something like that, which I'm pretty sure has to be a direct homage to Half-Life and how it's the Bioshock's version of your melee weapon.
Yeah, 100%.
Because he does ask you to look for a crowbar.
That's what it is, yes.
So now it's all about just exploring this space, and I don't really have a good, like, trajectory for this. I mean,
I need to
know,
like, pull up a map to remember this Welcome to Rapture before we get to the medical pavilion.
I mean, I don't know if anybody wants to highlight. I mean, there's two moments we need to highlight before we are off to our next area, which is the medical pavilion. But for me, I think one of the bigger moments is getting your plasmid for the first time. That's kind of a huge thing. Atlas explains to you that when you inject yourself with this blue liquid, you reconstruct your DNA. You basically become a splicer, so to speak, right? Is that what's happening to you?
Yeah. It's basically the same thing that happens when you get the mRNA vaccine.
It's true.
So this, I think, is more closer to like my personal horror tastes than it is to something this game does wrong. I don't like the idea of feeling super powerful in a game that is meant to scare me. In And we talked about how like this scene is so effective and you feel so vulnerable. You don't have a weapon. You get a crowbar. Like maybe I'll just barely survive. All of a sudden I'm shooting lightning out of my hands. And it's really tough for me to ever really get the sense again that I'm vulnerable and that these creatures can kill me, even though I struggle with the combat so much of this game. Like it feels like a narrative misstep to me to give you these godlike powers, A, so early, B, with so little like interrogation, and C, so little consequence.
And what about D?
They could look cooler.
I just feel like this is hard to talk about, but I do think
take your time.
Hey, slow down.
This is hard to say, but I do think that the way that the game progresses actually helps hand wave some of this complaint narratively a little bit that I can't say anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I'm of two minds here. I typically agree with what you're saying. At the same time, I do often forget that BioShock is kind of a horror game.
Same.
And that is kind of the mode it's presenting to you, is like you need to feel scared. Roxy, you even said it earlier, and I was like, and I even played it last night. And I'm like, oh yeah. Every single frame of this beginning is like a horror movie.
Yeah, it's very scary. I know some people who just straight up didn't play it because it was a horror game.
But I forget that because it's so action forward, you know.
Yeah.
And so yeah, they are in a weird zone, for sure.
I did kind of find myself wondering why I wasn't more scared when I used to play this game, because Resident Evil 2 Remake was the first game in a long, long time, probably since Dead Space, where I was kind of getting nervous at points, with my boy Mr. X lurking everywhere. But with this game, it never really struck me as that scary until this playthrough, where, you know, I kind of knew like that first splicer isn't going to have an opportunity to kill you before you get a weapon, but it still is kind of scary.
Well, I think this game to me is horrifying in much the same way that those FromSoft games are, where the horror is coming from two directions that are a little bit uncommon for the horror genre. One is just conceptually. So conceptually things are horrifying, and like sort of the dialogue you're hearing the splicers say off the cuff, that is pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
The other way that it's horrifying is is like you don't know something's in a room and it will sort of reveal itself, or you'll hear footsteps and suddenly something will be there.
Because it's so dark for you too.
It's also very, very dark. I think that I think the third person, or the first person camera perspective, sometimes doesn't allow for it to be horrifying in the same way that like a Resident Evil 2 remake, and just like the setup of it. It's like a little, like you said, like you have an electric hand, so you know.
I will also say, to the point of the silent protagonist, your character not being freaked out makes you less freaked out. Mm. So like if your main character is being like, oh, what the fuck? Oh, that's really scary. What's happening? Like if they were questioning it more or reacting to it more, it's easier to like kind of get in that mindset or empathize. But like they don't care. They're just going.
Yeah. Mm. I do love all the body horror stuff in here. I do think that is really fun. And I do like the fact that you yourself are a victim of the body horror problem of the situation, where you are
so
like a freak. Yeah. Something interesting does happen though when you inject yourself with the plasmid stuff for the first time, is you jump off of the second story onto the first story. You kind of go zonk out, and then you wake up and you see a couple of things happening. You know, Connor, remind us, what happens in this?
Yeah, movie? Like, as you're sort of like, but like you're almost conscious, I guess. You're like almost awake, coming out of whatever sort of knocked out state that you've been
very
in.
A dreamlike state.
A very what like state?
A dreamlike state.
Very dream scenario.
A little bit. And you see, I believe, a couple of splicers.
Nicolas Cage.
Look at this fish.
A couple
Ooh,
of
look at this fish, he says.
Is that a is should I know Nicolas Cage for saying that?
No, that's what the splicer
says. Splicer.
This is splicer.
He calls you a fish.
That's good. Well, they're talking about you, and that's that to me was scary of like, are these guys going to slice me open while I'm just knocked out? And I believe they're scared away by some heavy footsteps, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And what enters, we are introduced to the little sisters, which we don't have context for yet, and their caretake, which are these like little girls, maybe like 8 or 9 year old, freaky looking girlies.
Look,
and
Mr. Bubbles, it's an angel.
Yes, that's what she says talking about you, because they're going to harvest. I think they were going to harvest you, maybe for your Adam. Mm-hmm. And then
she says your belly's glowing, and she's like, "Oh, you know,
Adam,
be an angel soon."
So she does. They spare you because you're not dead. Interesting. Like I'm kind of confused as to why you get spared. Like why they don't just harvest your stuff. Does anybody know the answer to that?
That's it. I think they serve a professional function.
Okay.
In society, gotcha. That when someone dies, they will harvest that atom and repurpose it.
Okay. And it's just that people go after the little sisters, which is why the big daddies choose violence, or like, you know, snap into that mode. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I think I assumed it was because you weren't aggressive towards them. So they weren't aggressive towards you maybe, but,
I guess
I think
we do see dynamic play out throughout the game. If you leave them be, they'll leave you be. And they don't want to take a dead body.
Might test that out.
No, they do. They would rather take a dead body.
They're not going to kill you if you're not attacking them.
They're Batman. If you're still alive, you can't die. But if you are dead, what can you do?
Yeah. Little sister's giving big Emily vibes. Remember Emily from Hot Topic? No one remember the character of Emily? Oh, you guys should look up Emily from Hot Topic.
Emily the Strange, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking she looks like the little sisters look like real Pixar characters with the giant eyes.
Yeah, something about the way they're like designed with their cartooning kind of style. It feels exaggerated in that way.
Oh, yeah. I get the Emily reference.
Yeah.
I see it.
Yeah, you don't actually know much about the little sisters yet. You'll find out more about them later. But let's kind of, I don't know, other iconic moments from this whole section, I think, is finding the revolver. You know, there's a great lighting effect of a carriage or like a stroller on the wall, and there's a woman doting over her baby, and then when you get there, it's a gun that she's actually talking to.
Yeah.
Which
seems very political as well, right?
Yeah, right. Very on the nose at the time. I remember thinking this is so badass. And I don't think it's not cool now. I just think it's like it has the Citizen Kane effect of like, oh, this has now been done to death or something. Mm-hmm. Juxtapositions. That's like a good word to describe the theme of this game is like we're showing you one thing, but behind it, it's a different thing. Or like, you know, it's always... the music doesn't quite match the tone of the room you're in, or, you know, that's sort of the fear is coming from these things that don't quite compute.
It's actually really interesting you said Citizen Kane, because this playthrough, I was thinking so much how Andrew Ryan reminds me of Orson Welles.
Ooh. Yeah, or Charles Foster Kane.
Or
yeah.
Charles Foster Kane, but like the look of him and the voice, it's very Wellesian.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was on purpose too. Like that's a direct thing that you're picking up on, which is cool.
Yeah,
it's because I'm a smart consumer. I can see stuff like that.
The last thing I can think of in terms of like iconic moments from this whole section is at some point you know you're crawling along the rafters, you're seeing the little sister down below harvesting. Then you see from behind glass, which is how the game likes to position you a lot of times, is like from behind a shield where you cannot access, a scene will play out.
Big and Xbox 360 era trope.
Totally.
I love it.
Nick, what happens here?
A creepy old man approaches this little sister, but doesn't get too close. Actually, he hits her, I think.
Yeah.
And he kind of, did you notice... this is the first time I picked up on this. He like looks around for a big daddy.
Yeah.
Before he engages.
Yeah. There's none to be found. So he hits her, and then wouldn't you know it, big daddy from the top rope.
Yeah.
lands down and just brutally smashes this guy's freaking face into the wall, and he beats him up so hard, and then he throws him in the freaking glass window right next to you. It's so freaking sick.
Yeah. He also uses his drill, and we see how that's... Yeah, yeah.
Have has anybody seen the original teaser trailer for BioShock?
No.
It's, yeah, I think I vaguely remember up, right? It. Yeah.
Maybe it was...
Or is it for two?
The one that I remember is the you're zooming in on Rapture, and you see a character walk into frame, and the camera becomes a first person view of him. It's making you think you're Jack, you're walking around, and then all of a sudden the drill of a big daddy like goes through the chest of the person.
Yeah, right.
It's so brutal. It's so awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, this is a really cool scene, and this is sort of how this whole sequence ends, is with you kind of getting out of this little area. You are then, you know, in front of what you don't know at the time is going to be like basically a loading screen, but is like this whole horror moment where the lights are go off and you see the splicers are coming in to get you, and it's like, oh my gosh, are we going to get out? How are we going to get out of here? And then Atlas opens the door right at the last minute. And you're free.
I will say, right before the splicers attack, we get another Andrew Ryan video.
Yes.
Oh, yes. And it's just he's talking to you, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
This is one of my...
Are you KGB?
First of all, very funny that he's like, are you CIA or KGB? And he's like, I'm just a dude. it's another example of his inflated self-importance that he's like, you must be two of the biggest agencies. It's like, I'm
just
crash.
A
sorry,
kid.
Man.
My life is a nightmare.
But also, this is where it really became clear to me the struggle I have throughout the game, where since everything is communicated to you through audio logs and radio, like, it's hard to tell what's live and what's taped. And
yes.
They I noticed it this time, but I remembered in the past being like, was that a video he played? But it was Atlas saying like, that was Andrew Ryan himself. Mm-hmm. And feeling like I understand the communication of that story beat is that Andrew Ryan is still around and he's still like watching the proceedings, but it definitely felt like a movie to him. Like, we've seen Andrew Ryan twice in the exact same context, but wildly different time periods. So like, it's tough. It's tough.
Oh yeah. I unfortunately during this sequence last night forgot to pay attention to what he was saying. And I was just like kind of looking around at stuff, and I was like, wait a minute, what hold on. What are you talking about? And I don't actually know what he's talking about.
He's basically, he thinks you're a spy, he wants to get you. And he ends it with it's something like, and farewell or Dos Vidania. It's something like that.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
Hedging his bets that you might be American or you might be Russian still.
Love it. So yeah, let's and that's gonna do it for this episode. July, I'm like super curious, as somebody who's maybe played this sequence for the first time, like, what were your overall thoughts of this opening? Were you intrigued? Did this suck?
Those are my only choices.
Yeah, there's not like a whole range between there. You have to choose one or the other.
Paragon or Renegade.
And none of this is like you liked it. Intrigued?
I know, it's very diplomatic, very political of you to give me these two choices. I'm going with intrigued.
Okay.
And not to go any further than that, but I'm going to say that I did have a hard time physically putting down the Switch because I've played a lot of the game so far.
Oh, great. Yeah. I'm happy to hear that. That's great.
So I've enjoyed my time. Don't fully understand the full story just yet. You know, there's a lot of questions still for me, but I'm loving the, you know, sorry, McCullough, I'm loving the gameplay.
I would rather you guys love it and enjoy it.
Yes.
That is generally my tract.
For a long time in the game, even after getting the revolver and other guns, I'm still using the wrench a lot.
Oh yeah, the wrench is
yeah,
it's so
it doesn't
fun.
Run out of bullets.
It's yeah. Also just I love using the thing that might be a little bit more unique to the game I'm playing. So like guns are in everything, but wrenches?
Yeah, and we'll get into it more on the next episode, I'm sure, but all the hacking parts of the game actually are really good.
Yeah, I know. It's weird really because that's not usually the case. Yeah.
I find it so addictive. I like hacking.
I do too. Yep. Yeah, me too.
It is rare that I find a game that makes me say, I don't need more bullets.
Wow, I never thought I'd see the day.
Wow, and he threw the voice this time.
I need more.
All right. Let's go ahead and plug before we head on out. Michael McCullough, where can people find you? What do you want people to know?
I'm on Twitter at Secret Blimp, Twitch at twitch.tv/Secret Blimp, and check out my YouTube, youtube.com/@Secret Blimp.
Perfect. Nick Costanza.
You can listen to the Reactivators podcast at Nick Costanza on most socials, at Nick_Costanza on X. Just be nice. Love your neighbor.
Aww.
Okay. July Diaz.
I'm going to plug. So I've been watching this new series on Hulu. It's called Shogun.
Okay.
Do you know what it is?
I've seen this. Yeah, I've seen it.
I love it so much that I've actually started rewatching it, but with the sound off and just me doing other things. You know, it's just on in the background.
I can't tell if this is real. Is this real?
It's real, yeah. And then instead, I've interposed, I've put my own sound into the show, and it's the sound of two podcast episodes. The Roast to Mario and Donkey Kong of Video Games, a comedy show. Mm-hmm. Great, great. Just check those out, and also check out Inside Video Games Classic.
Roxy Poke.
I am on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Twitch as Red Mage Roxy. I stream 3 days a week. Come check me out. Currently doing a Mass Effect 2 Insanity run and literally losing my mind. So come... hold my hand, I guess, while I go crazy. I'd appreciate having more folks over there.
Connor McCabe.
Yeah, check out my podcast if you don't already. Call Me By Your Game. It's available wherever you get your shows. Check me out on Twitch as well. I've been streaming a lot more this year. Kind of consistently, well, not consistently as far as the time, but consistently as in I do it at twitch.tv/consiscool69. If you're listening to this, I'm going to be a little further along in my playthrough as I stream through this game, but if you want to come watch me play and chat about it. Follow me there. And thanks for listening.
Absolutely. We'll be back next week, folks. Bye-bye for now.